someone else's journey is our lesson.
We used to say, the difficult we do immediately, the impossible just takes a little more time.
Someone else's lesson is our gift.
I believe part of our responsibility is really to equip and inspire our students to ask those difficult questions.
Be encouraged by the stories that lift us all.
I came to Howard because I wanted to be the President of the United States.
Somebody saw something in me, and it's my duty to be that person for somebody else.
Now, join Dr. Wayne Frederick, President of Howard University, and his guest on The Journey.
My guest today has spent his professional career helping people to understand science and engineering. He has authored or co-authored more than 240 articles and is a man who believes in experimenting and designing. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today on The Journey is Dr. Ashiel Masak, Dean of the Howard University College of Engineering and Architecture. Welcome.
Thank you, President.
Tell me, where did you start your journey?
Well, it depends how far back you want to go, but if we go back to the very beginning, I was born in Haiti, the poorest country on earth, with the most humble of beginnings, literally living in huts, living in a dirt floor, on a dirt floor house. Born in Haiti, I had six sisters, three younger and three older sisters. And I went to school, to my father's school, for my primary school, a primary education. And I went on to begin my secondary education in Haiti. Then at the age of about 15, I left Haiti and went to Belgium and spent about 4 years there. So from Haiti to Belgium, you speak French still. And I moved to Boston without knowing much English at all, only to go to MIT a year later and did all the dirty work you could do to start to learn English, to be exposed to the language, and began MIT, got all my 3 degrees there in aerospace engineering, and went on to have a profession.
Tell me, what about MIT and aerospace engineering attracted you?
Well, I recall as a young boy in Haiti, I remember I was maybe 7 or 8 years old, and I looked up in the sky and saw a plane crossing the island, and I thought it was quite a mystery that captured my imagination, really. Then when I went to MIT, actually, I was not an aerospace engineer for the first couple of weeks. I wanted to be an electrical engineer. 2 weeks into the process, I decided to move into what I thought my passion was, and I joined in to become a student in aerospace engineering, and I stayed in that profession ever since.
Now, at MIT, you must have been, at the time that you attended, one of few minorities, and certainly one of few with your background.
Indeed. I was at MIT, and in my 8 years at MIT, never did I once have an African-American professor in my 8 years. And in my 8 years at MIT, I also didn't have an African-American classmate. And it was always one in the crowd, and with all the challenges that come with it. In fact, it was quite a brutal awakening when at the end of my very first semester, I was called in at MIT to some office, and I was pretty much reprimanded, to tell you the truth, to say, well, we bring in folks like you, it was MIT, folks like you here, and we want to make sure you don't fail. And if you have trouble, you need to come to us, and so on and so forth. So they went on, and I watched the fellow give me all these words for about 40 minutes, and I did not say a single word, and watched him say those words to me. Eventually, he pulled out a folder, a manila folder, that had my record in it. He then opened it, and he literally became as red as a tomato because he couldn't accept the fact that, well, I had gotten all A's, and he realized that his reprimand was not warranted. And that was my first beginning.
Well, that was quite a baptism of fire, as they say.
Yes.
Now, in terms of career, as you moved from MIT, what about an academic career interested you so strongly?
Well, initially, I was at Draper Laboratory and was doing quite a bit of research for NASA and work with the space station and space shuttle and quite a lot of exciting work. Eventually, I was directly working with NASA and getting my own contracts, and I was also advising students at MIT for their bachelor's and PhD, master's and PhD. So I was doing a little bit of academic work in that regard. And eventually, I said, well, why don't I jump in and be an academician to really form a career in that arena? So I went ahead and had some adjunct faculty work to see if I liked it. And I realized that I did. Then an opportunity presented itself at Northeastern University where they wanted to transform the capstone design program department-wide. And I thought it was an exciting opportunity. So I jumped in that position and did quite well. And that was the beginning.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is the Dean of the College of Engineering and Architecture, Dr. Ashiel Masak. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. So Dr. Masak, today we talk a lot about STEM, science, technology, engineering, math, and some people would even add STEAM, adding arts and humanities, you know, as part of the entire core of STEM. In your opinion, when you look at the African-American participation rate in this, in the disciplines for which your college is responsible, what is your view of the trajectory of African-Americans participating in engineering and architecture?
I think that's one of the most important questions. The future of our very country depends on STEM in a very significant way. And the potential that African Americans have to offer to impact that that challenge is tremendous. And Howard University in particular has a tremendous role to play, both in preparing PhDs and in producing students with bachelor's and master's degrees who will enter the workforce. And needless to say, our college itself will continue to play a role in that. Now, I've worked and interacted with many companies who really are interested in what we have to offer. And the college is prepared to make a huge difference, both in terms of numbers and in terms of quality. So my role as dean is to really be transformative, both in the numbers that we produce and in the quality of our students.
Now, a lot of this obviously has to start early in K through 12, and on our campus we have a middle school focused on math and science. Do you think that these types of innovative practices in which we expose African-American students to the STEM disciplines that early, to math and science that early, are helpful? Is there data to support doing that?
I think the evidence is very clear. That this is where we begin to make that transformation. So having a middle school at the heart of a university such as Howard is unique and is tremendously the right thing to do. It's very much the right thing to do. And the having the students be exposed to what a university looks like as young kids can broaden their horizons to see what could be, what their future could be like. So I hope that the college will continue to play a role in that endeavor and do much more of it.
Recently, I was in an invigorating conversation with Purdue's president, President Mitch Daniels, who's a former governor of Indiana. And that discussion really was surrounding kind of where we are as a nation in terms of workforce, in terms of the economy, in terms of what our higher ed institutions are putting out. And I think there are very many perspectives about what we should be doing. But underlying that is the fact that technology has really been changing the society we live in, and doing it rapidly, so rapidly that I'm not sure higher ed institutions are even keeping pace with the changes that are happening, right? And if you look at, you know, companies like General Electric, it took decades to build their brand. Today, you look at a company, Snapchat or one of these startups, and before you know it, you've got a $1 billion company with 19 employees. Now, that means that the workforce that you're creating is different. And when you think of engineering and technology, you've got a driverless car today. What are we going to do with the rest of that workforce? And how are engineers socializing themselves around societal needs to make sure that we don't end up in a circumstance where we just aren't serving everyone?
Well, I think that calls for the determination to rethink how we do things from the ground up. We have to be willing to break the mold, to rethink how we do things, to be willing. In fact, as you know, the college itself is transforming itself in terms of bringing interdisciplinary aspects to our education, in terms of reorganizing ourselves to see what is the wave of the future, what must we be prepared for, what are our students going to be faced as they move on to the workforce. And we are not afraid to act in ways that the students will need to be aware of a decade from now. As you just mentioned, the changes are taking place so rapidly that what we had been doing 10 years ago is no longer what we can do today. So that's exactly our mindset. We are transformative in a way that will address those dynamic changes taking place.
And as you recruit faculty, what are you looking for in that faculty that will meet those needs?
That's interesting. The traditional way is to make it be department focused, where a disciplinary area needs a faculty member, and the faculty members who are in this particular area search for a faculty member who then goes into that disciplinary area again. We are breaking that mold completely. We have a search committee that is completely college-wide, where we, from the outset, are looking at faculty members that think in an interdisciplinary way. And in the process, we bring in non-engineers in that process to inject their perspective. So that's what we're talking about, which is entirely what's needed for the future engineer.
And the field of architecture, obviously, we have a significant underrepresentation of minorities in architecture, always have, and it appears to be getting worse, the data would suggest. Are there specific and special recruitment activities that you're conducting in that area?
Absolutely. One of the things we have done is to actually reposition architecture, because there are certain synergies with engineering that we have not thus far exploited, and we intend to do so. In the search that I am referring to, architecture is part of it, and we are again having that approach of interdisciplinary thinking and broader thinking than architecture itself. Now, as far as the lack of representation of minorities in that business, in that discipline, that's extremely true, and we are addressing it as well. In my previous positions, I have been in a department, for example, where we had not hired a female faculty member for 100 years. And within 3 years, we became one of the most diverse departments in the country. So I expect that kind of innovative thinking, that kind of aggressively changing the paradigm, to apply again to us. And I do expect that we are going to continue and increasingly so play a role in changing those numbers.
As we close, you could tell our listeners, what does the new research building that we have opened mean to the College of Engineering and Architecture?
Well, I believe it's going to be instrumental because it defines the very meaning of interdisciplinary thinking. The faculty members who go there come in with that explicit understood mindset that we are going to work with others who think differently than we do, others who have different expertise than we do, and others who are going to create things in a collaborative way that will hopefully and expectedly yield to better products and better paradigms of how engineering should be in the future.
Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Dr. Ashiel Misak, the Dean of the College of Engineering and Architecture. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne Frederick on the Howard University Radio Network.